This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
Welcome to the Inside Carolina podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Ashley, joined by Jason Staples and Greg Barnes. That means it is the Game Plan podcast. Recording this on Thursday night. You know what nighttime podcasts mean. John Siegley will be working overtime to get this published and out to you, but Jason, Greg, and I will have a lot of fun doing this show. Rate us, review us, subscribe, do all that stuff on YouTube. Subscribe so you can get these YouTube channels and maybe see us on a Thursday evening enjoying ourselves. Maybe see Jason Staples eating a meal during the podcast someday. It can always be interesting on the YouTube version. If you're on iTunes or Spotify or however you get your podcast, certainly send us a review, send us a rating. It helps us provide more content to you. And if you ask a question in there, maybe we'll answer it on air. Gentlemen, oh, before I forget, Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. How can I forget them? Great sponsors of this podcast. And it is Christmas time. I'll talk about them in a minute, but you need to visit them and support them as much as possible. Get your gear there and there only. Gentlemen, it is Wake Forest week. And first I want to say this is the seventh straight game Carolina's played in 7 weeks. And Greg, I want to ask you, to who goes the credit for that? Because we see these games getting canceled left and right. We see across the board problems with COVID across the nation. But Mack Brown and his staff, I guess they get the credit. They've done a wonderful job keeping Carolina safe, keeping Carolina available to play. I think it's pretty remarkable from where we came from talking about this nearly 2 months ago.
Yeah, absolutely. If you'd have told me that North Carolina would only have one game postponed, well, technically canceled, but postponed in the sense that they're not going to lose the game, at least not right now, I probably would have laughed. I talked to some people around the program before the season started, and nobody thought that UNC would be able to get in all 11 games. Thought it was really kind of a pipe dream. So, yeah, you've got to give – I mean, North Carolina for sure – credit. They've taken it seriously from day one, even dating back to the spring. And I really think that's a big part of this. I don't know if poetic justice is the right framing, but when Mullen's talking about, you know, packing the swamp and then a week later they have all the cases, there's something about that, right? And the fact that Mack Brown and a lot of these coaches in the ACC have been so adamant about doing it to the best of their ability and trying to keep everybody safe so they can, you know, keep everybody safe, but also so they can get the games in and so that they can play for what they want to play for, so they can play for the fans, so they can play for money to help the athletic department, all those things. And it's been an effort where they've just really kind of done a good job with it. And I think that goes across the board. I know you got the Pitt Georgia Tech game had to be rescheduled. They announced that on Thursday afternoon. So things are still going to pop up for sure. But I think the ACC as a whole has done a really good job in taking this seriously and constructing the schedule where they can move some things around. Because there are a lot of games now on that December 12th weekend. But that's how they scheduled it. They set it up so they had some flexibility. And as we sit here, the second week of November, so far so good. Certainly knocking on wood with how the nation is doing with COVID cases. Hopefully that does not change.
Yeah, it is Thursday night recording this. You'll hear it Friday morning. And there's still time for Wake Forest and Carolina to be moved. But you're right. So far, so good. Jason,
By the way, I think there's one other thing we should also talk about here in terms of that for Carolina. And you notice there's two other things. One is the players have had to take all that seriously.
Sure.
Yeah, for that's
that
where
to be the case. And when you think about what that means as well, when you're in the hunt, when you actually believe that you've got a shot at playing for, say, a conference title or whatever, there's going to be more of a tendency to be disciplined with that. And that's something that I think the fact that Carolina is actually a good team and that they've actually embraced the idea that of the expectations and all that has kept them more accountable. Right? I mean, that's a factor. That it's one thing, you know, for the coaches to take this really seriously, but it doesn't matter if the players go out and, you know, go to a college party or, you know, go hang out on Franklin Street or whatever when, you know, the team's not actually meeting. So that's a testament to Carolina. So there are obviously two sides to this that, you know, it wasn't Carolina that was the reason for the other game to get, as you said, postponed, quote unquote. It wasn't Carolina's fault on that. So it still can happen from the other side, but I think that's a factor as well in terms of the players have been invested and fully sold, fully bought into, I'm going to make sure that I'm doing this right for my teammates and to try to win a championship. So that's another factor. The second thing though, as well, is North Carolina has still not been hit as hard by COVID-19 as some other states and metropolitan areas as well. And I think that's also part of the factor. There has been significant COVID-19 here for sure, but you know, you compare that with what has happened in certain large cities and all of that compared to, you know, some of the places around here, it's not been quite as severe as well with some of the places in the ACC, you know, not just North Carolina, but some of the places in the ACC where these schools are, it's been ducked a little bit more regionally, I think as in terms of where the campuses are located as well. So I think the first one is the bigger factor. The second one also can't be ignored completely.
Yeah. And that tells you folks how much we do these podcasts and all, because that's the exact question I was going to ask Jason. It was going to be, how does that speak to the Mac Brown's program, his program of accountability and all those things? Jason answered it before I could ask.
And coming out of Halloween weekend. I mean, a lot of people who listen to this podcast probably, old enough that, you know, you have to rack your brain a little bit, but if you don't blow a gasket thinking back too far on this, you know, Halloween on a college campus, even when most of the students have gone home, Halloween in college tends to be a pretty fun endeavor for a lot of people. So that's one of those memories. Things. I told you, don't blow a gasket now thinking about this.
Starting to sweat.
Yeah. You know, Halloween tends to be a pretty good time for college age students. And again, when you're really invested, you're going to be more likely to avoid that scene. When you're less invested, you know, those players might start, deciding, I heard about a party over there that's going to be pretty good tonight, and I'm going to go to that. And the final thing actually to make that even easier is when there really aren't other students to speak of on the UNC campus, that factor is huge. So if you go to, you know, a place like Florida State where they've got students on campus, right? There's a lot more risk, or Clemson, you know, they've got students on campus, and those places there, you know, how did Trevor Lawrence get it? Well, you know, there's just a lot more contact that he's going to necessarily have because there's people around. And, you know, UNC, by pulling the plug when they did, actually, that made it a lot easier for the programs as well. And, you know, when you come to something like Halloween, where there are fewer parties because there just aren't as many students.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I'm not getting into the politics of it or the mechanisms of it, but when they got students off campus, for the most part, that saved the football season.
Oh, absolutely.
In my opinion.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about this game. Wake Forest comes to Chapel Hill. If I'm reading correctly, and it's hard to believe because Wake Forest is just up the road. It's the third time in almost 10 years that the Deacons have been to Kenan Stadium. Greg, they come in on a four-game winning streak, but that's not the most impressive thing that Wake Forest comes in with. It's the turnover margin. I want you to explain to me and to our listeners how a team in college football today can be 15-1 in turnover margin. That stat might be one of the most impressive stats in the nation to me.
Yeah, and it's interesting because depending on who you talk to, there's a lot of thought that turnovers are largely based in luck. Now, how much can you influence luck? We could have that discussion for quite a while, I'm sure. That certainly plays a factor when you're talking about a differential to that extent. But what Wake Forest does is they really take away the deep pass. They give up the fewest explosive plays in the ACC when you're talking about 30-plus yards, and they're right near the top, and 20-plus yards plays. So they keep everything in front of them. And that forces teams to kind of march down the field on them. And that's one of the ways that you get in these situations where they're able to capitalize. Offensively, they're just fundamentally sound. Sam Hartman has done a fantastic job. He's very smart with his decision-making, doesn't take any risks, and they're able to move the ball effectively. And they hold on to the ball. I mean, he hasn't thrown a pick yet. So it's good coaching, a little bit of luck, and then some schematics. And when all those three things work for you, you end up with a ratio like that where you're plus, 2.3 in turnover margin, which is going to win you a lot of games.
Jason, when you're looking at that, you look at their record. They lost to Clemson, which no harm in that. Everybody does except Notre Dame, I guess, last weekend. The outlier there is the shootout against NC State. They lose that game. But let's talk about Wake Forest schematically. A lot was made when Jamie Newman transferred to Georgia and then quit, or excuse me, opted out at Georgia.
You're excused.
But Sam Hartman, I've mentioned this before on this podcast this week, he actually beat out Newman last year before he got hurt. And then Newman went and had a ridiculously good year for Wake Forest with Sage Surratt's help as well. Neither one of those guys will be on the field in Kenan Stadium. But what does Wake Forest do differently, if anything, than they did last year with Surratt, with Newman, and with those guys on offense?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that Newman was basically another running back at quarterback. I mean, and actually, I thought it was a weird fit for him to go to Georgia to begin with because, you know, he throws it well. He's a good thrower. But he's not like a, NFL level, NFL starter level passer, drop back passer, in my view. He might end up playing in the NFL. He's got a strong enough arm and there can be some development there. But what he did at Wake Forest that made him so dynamic was he was able, with their extremely unusual, like they've got a unique offense with what they do with that elongated mesh point where they just, the quarterback just rides along and just, they'll go through the hole together.
I like that elongated mesh point. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Is that kind of like the muddle huddle that I call it?
Yeah.
Elongated muddle huddle.
Yeah. I mean, they just, the quarterback will stick the ball in the running back's gut and then just, they'll sit there and this is a response to so many teams deciding to try to muddy the read. So you'll have a, like if you're reading the defensive end will try to not turn his shoulders so much that the quarterback obviously has to keep it. He's going to force the quarterback to hold it just a beat and then go in on the running back. Cause that allows the defense to regain a little bit of the timing edge. Well, Wake Forest has just leaned into that and said, okay, fine. If you're going to muddy this and the read's not clear, my guy is just going to just stay right there meshing with the running back and he'll just keep meshing up the field until somebody tells him you got to pull it or you got to give it. So whoever's going to hit whoever's first, that's when it's going to be given. And the thing is, when Newman would pull and run, he was every bit as good a runner. I mean, he's, 220 pounds or whatever it is. I mean, he's a big boy. And that's a grown man coming through there carrying the football who can move. And that guy as a runner gave you a ton of problems as a defensive coordinator because he was just hard to get on the ground. And you're already adding the problem of that weird mesh point that you're having to deal with. in that unusual read option situation. And then they'll add to that, you know, going with that long mesh point with RPO stuff where the guy he's going to ride the mesh point longer and then pull and throw. And so, you know, doing all that with a guy that can run it the way that that Newman can, that's what really made them so difficult to defend with him. With Hartman, it's different. Hartman's actually a better thrower, in my opinion, than Newman was overall. And, you know, in terms of not off of some of that action. Newman may have had a little bit better deep ball, a little stronger arm. So, I mean, that worked well with Surratt. But I think Hartman is a guy that you can throw more concepts with. And so that's something that maybe they're not quite as dynamic in the running game, but I think they're a little bit more of a threat to in the standard passing game. And again, no interceptions, only one fumble lost on the year. It's the other thing that's worth noting, 11 interceptions, by the way, their defense. I'm looking at all their numbers, and that's just, Greg, you were talking about this again, and I had to go and take a look at it. It's like, really, I mean, golly, that's a lot of interceptions, but no interceptions from Hartman. He takes care of the football. And that's, you know, that's the other thing that you're going to expect from them. But they do such a good job with that read option game of not getting behind the sticks, you know, because it's so hard. They always have the numbers. And if you try to bring that extra safety into the box, then they're going to RPO you and throw it downfield. And that's going to make it tough, that they're so often in second and six, third and two, 3 yard gain. Second and six, third and two, 4 yard gain. And that's what they keep doing to you. And then Hartman just makes the right decision over and over again. And then he's going to be consistent as a thrower, consistent enough. And that makes him tough to defend.
Yeah. And Tommy, when you look at this offense in terms of the passing game, I mean, losing Sage Surratt's huge. And not only that, you lost Scotty Washington and then their third wide receiver. So those are critical losses in the passing
game. And those were their vertical guys.
Right. And so what does Dave Clawson and his staff do? Well, if you look at what they've done since the loss to Clemson, which was a season opener, they have carried the ball, run the ball 234 times. They have passed the ball 134 times. So 100 difference there. It's 47-27 on average over the last five games. And so kind of to Jason's point, they're not asking Hartman to be a hero. They're asking him to make smart plays. And they're relying on their run game. And then their defense has been good. Their defense has not been great. But look, when you've got that kind of turnover margin and you're looking at when I look at Wake Forest, you're looking at, okay, this team is 27th nationally in red zone offense. They score almost every time they get into the red zone. Third nationally in turnover margin. They're converting third downs, not at a great level, but 38%. It's not terrible. And then they take care of the ball. And so you do all of those things, and you've got a smart quarterback, you're going to be in a lot of games. And when you add to that, you're not giving up explosive plays. You're making other teams march down the field, which gives them the opportunity to make those mistakes. This is kind of a well-crafted approach. You've got to have the players to execute it. You've got to have guys to know their roles, know their jobs, and make sure they make smart plays. And you can cover up a lot of talent deficiencies that way. So I think you got to give Dave Clawson a lot of credit for the way that he's coached this team, even though they don't have some of the weapons at some of the skill positions that maybe they had last year.
Greg, a lot of people always would talk about Duke does not beat themselves. Wake Forest is the epitome of not beating themselves with the things you outlined there. Looking at them, they've got the running backs, Walker and Bill Smith have been, you know, that's their version of Javonte Williams and Michael Carter, not to that level. But then Roberson, and I apologize for mispronouncing his name if I've done so, can make plays, and he's got the speed to get loose. He had the 80-yarder against Syracuse. Greg, let's before we get to the game plan portion about what we think will happen, what's the loss, potential loss, of Brian Anderson mean to the North Carolina offensive line?
Well, I think if he doesn't play, that's a pretty significant loss, especially when you factor in we don't know exactly what Jordan Tucker's situation is. Tucker did play against Duke. He has practiced. I mean, it's really just the the hand that he's got to cast in. But when you're a tackle, you need both hands. And so having that cast in, they decided that it was better to have Awesome Richards out there opposite of Joshua Zudu than relying on Tucker too much. And so that's a big part of what Stacey Searles has been dealing with. And then you add in the fact that maybe Anderson can't go. I spent a lot of time watching him there in the fourth quarter. He was in the injury tent for a long time. When he came out of the injury tent, he was not walking normal. He was still limping pretty severely. Is that something that can get healed up pretty quickly? If he plays, is he at 100%? But this is not an offensive line that is very deep. They have been able to get some guys more reps of late, but they really only go six or seven deep. So when you're talking about Kieron Johnson, who's a walk-on junior, he's been a good player for sure. But when you're having to rely on him as your starter, that puts a lot of pressure on the young man. And that kind of changes your dynamic because Brian Anderson, regardless of his skill set and talent level, he's really emerged as a leader on this offense. I mean, when you talk to coaches, they point to Sam, obviously, Michael Carter, and Brian Anderson are kind of the big leaders on this offense. So you lose that guy up front who can really communicate so well with everybody along the offensive line. So it is a big loss if he's not able to go, especially with – and we'll get to this in the game plan portion, Tommy – but especially with UNC's need to be able to run the ball efficiently in this game.
Jason, let's rank the importance of players on an offense. Quarterback number one, right? Who's number two?
Wide receivers, right?
Who's number two?
It depends a little bit on what offense you're running, but I mean,
Carolina's.
You can make a strong argument that number two is going to be your center.
How it. Just detail, just briefly as you can, what all a center does on every given play. I mean, it's not just go up and snap the ball.
In most offenses, the center is going to call the front. So the center identifies based on whatever on the defensive alignment who the – you've got to call the mic is what it's called. And you're identifying the person that is – however you want to talk about it, is identified as the mic linebacker. And it might not be a linebacker. It's just for formation purposes. Here's who we're treating as the middle part of the defense that is who we, whatever our blocking assignments are, they're based on where the midpoint is. So, if you've got a protection, that guy's the mic. Normally the center calls the mic. Now you can delegate that to the quarterback, but that adds to the quarterback's plate. But you've got designation of the mic. You've got any sort of protection checks or checks in the running game in terms of run blocking. That goes on the center generally as well. It can be done by somebody else, but it's just a lot harder. And so that usually goes on the center. And then of course the center has to snap it, which that's a lot more complicated than most people think in terms of you've got to be – there are a lot of guys who can play offensive line really well who cannot snap. And then there are a lot of guys who can snap it who can't snap and block, right? You got to actually be able to snap the ball. And you got to remember, they're allowed to move. As soon as your arm starts moving backwards, they're allowed to move. So you have to snap accurately while getting hit as you're finishing your snap. And then you have to anchor enough to be able to do your assignment. So you got like a zero technique over you, and you've got to be able to snap, anchor your feet, and then turn your hips and all that wherever you're trying to keep that guy from going while he's going on your first movement. Good luck with that. I mean, the center is a really tough spot. And Carolina actually asks a decent amount of their center because they move. They actually ask – they'll ask Anderson to pull some. They do all sorts of things with him. So and that shows you that they believe he can do it. So – yeah, that's significant. And the reason that the other reason that you could argue that it's the center is not only is he essentially the quarterback of the offensive line, but it's sort of like in baseball. If you want to be strong, you want to be strong up the middle. If you're going to have any weaknesses, you want a weakness on one edge because you can kind of compensate for that one way or another. If you've got real problems up the middle, that's the fastest way to get pressure on the quarterback is right up the middle. And if you can overpower somebody and push a guy right back into the quarterback's lap, nothing causes more problems for an offense than when a defense can dominate the middle of the offense. So You know, this is why you could argue it's the center, even though, even if that's not your next best player, you at least have to have that. You have to have somebody you trust at that position or your offense is going to have trouble.
Yeah, we know how tough pressure up the middle is from 95% of quarterbacks as well. And Anderson's really gotten better in that regard as well. We'll see what happens. I mean, Kieron Johnson could play. Jonathan Adorno is certainly a young guy that they can use. We'll see what Carolina does. Let me take a short break, talk about Johnny T-Shirt, johnnyt-shirt.com, sponsor to this podcast, Jason's favorite advertising read there is. We need to get another one in here. It's Christmas time. Black Friday deals, they're always having sales. Look, they've been selling this throwback jersey that's pretty cool if you like the old Mac Brown jerseys. In fact, my drink is a theme. It's the 95th batch of Blackened Metallica's bourbon that might be relevant on Saturday when those throwback jerseys potentially come out. Johnny T-Shirt's had them on sale all fall. Great thing about Johnny T-Shirt, not only all the gear they sell, is that you get 10% off your everyday order if you're an Inside Carolina Premium subscriber. Tack that onto the sales they have, and you've made wonderful sale. You've made wonderful savings, and you've provided a service to a local business that's alumni-owned and operated. Shop there. Shop online. They're great. You can't go wrong there. National guys are going to pay their bills. We'll be right back with the game plan portion of the Game Plan Podcast. I'm Tommy Ashley. That's Jason Staples and Greg Barnes.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
All right, let's start with Carolina's offense. I don't know how we normally do it, but I'm starting with Carolina's offense because, Greg, you mentioned the 11 interceptions, or Jason, you mentioned Wake Forest's 11 interceptions. They've got 9 returning starters on defense. They're led by true freshmen in the defensive backfield that have made plays. What does Wake Forest do to prevent those explosive plays? How can Wake Forest prevent Sam Howell from getting those explosive plays?
Well, I'll let Jason dive into the specific schematics of it, but it's just a matter of making sure you've got enough guys back where any deep passes are going to be interfered with, whether it be interceptions or whether it be pass breakups. I mean, you're really kind of daring somebody to throw deep. And we've seen a lot of teams do that against North Carolina this year, and they've had success with it. And it took North Carolina a little bit of time to figure out how to combat that. But I really think more than anything, this is a game where Sam Howell just has to be smart. I mean, if you look at what Wake has done, how they've won these games of late, they haven't lost a turnover battle in any of these games. And the last couple ones, they've been +2, +3. And that's going to get it done. And so what North Carolina is going to have to do is they're going to have to be able to sustain drives. And they're going to have success running the ball. And so what you're going to see, the Duke game was interesting in that Duke was determined to take away the run. And so North Carolina was able to utilize the pass game, really the quick pass game, early. I think 14 of the first 20 plays were pass plays. Some of those were RPOs, of course. And once Duke figured out that, crap, we're not going to be able to stop the pass, they've got to loosen up, and then North Carolina hit them with the run game, and it was over. This is going to be a little bit different in that North Carolina's got to have success running the ball. And if Sam tries to force the issue down the field, you're setting yourself up for some opportunities to have some passes intercepted, at least have some plays not go in your favor. Then all of a sudden, instead of first and 10, you're looking at second 10 or even third and 10. And that's not what you want to be in, obviously. So I think this is a game that we get to see some discipline out of Sam and how Phil Longo does a good job with him. He forced some things earlier in the year, and he's made strides in that regard here of late. And so I think that's going to be something to watch, is if he can take what's there without forcing things and let the run game do what it's supposed to do, that's how North Carolina has success offensively.
Jason, build off that. I mean, I think last year the success that Carolina had in the first two games against Miami and South Carolina didn't really work against Wake Forest, at least in the first half. Does this game being later in the season, where Sam Howell certainly evolved and gotten more patient, does that help Carolina's offense, or to what level does that help Carolina's offense against a team like Wake Forest? Muted. I get to tell you, you're muted. It's usually Buck.
I think it helps a lot that that first of all, they're a lot further along in the system. And just in terms of understanding what's being asked and all of that. So you can be more patient. You can understand what you're up against. The thing that to me is the bigger issue here, the bigger help, is Wake Forest gave North Carolina a ton of trouble up front last year with all the slanting and all the movement that they brought from their defensive line and their linebackers. I mean, they did a lot. They played a lot of games up front, and Carolina's offensive line is talented. Those guys, when they get their hands on you, good luck. But the place where they've had some issues at times for last year, and then a little bit less so this year, has been when teams have moved on them and when you've got to have communication and passing stuff off. And last year, they weren't very good at that at all. I mean, they're in a new offense and you're figuring stuff out with young offensive linemen. And, you know, you just had guys that, I mean, I remember going through to look through plays to break stuff down. And there were plays where guy would pull and he's supposed to block that guy. And he just had no idea who he's supposed to block. Or, you know, a guy would pull and the guy that's supposed to block the guy that's over the puller would block somebody else. And just, you'd have guys coming completely free. That's the stuff that shouldn't happen this year. And it hasn't happened all that much this year. It's happened a few times here and there, but that's going to happen against, you know, on occasion, you know, even with experienced teams, but it's happened a lot less. And so that the question is whether or not they're going to be able to really, whether we're going to see that difference take over. Cause if Wake Forest isn't able to cause some confusion up front and get the free runners to create tackles for loss, like they did last year, then North Carolina is going to be able to get, they're going to get that running game started up, and then it's easy to be patient. Because then you're running the football, you're able to do all that. The real danger here is that the guy that you count on the most to make sure that those things are identified is out. And that's where Brian Henderson is just so important. And that's my concern coming into this game, is are they going to be able up front to handle all the movement that Wake Forest is going to throw at them with a different guy at center? Are they going to have some busts and guys coming straight up the A gap or the B gap without being blocked just because you have a new guy in there? When you have a bunch of guys that have played together, and I know Ingersoll has talked plenty about this, that when you played next to a guy for years, you just know where that guy's going to be. And when all of a sudden there's a new guy in there next to you, that it takes some time to get natural again with that stuff. And so that's my concern coming into this. They should be a lot better, but they need to be a lot better in order to be able to do offensively what they should be able to, what they should do and what they need to do in this game.
Greg, is this a Javonte and Michael Carter game, or is it a Sam Howell game for Carolina's offense? Both is not an option. It's multiple choice, but there is no both.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact, again, I like the Duke game just because it's kind of a good test of kind of what you're looking for, right? You look at how that game played out, and everybody's talking about, wow, you know, Javonte Williams and Michael Carter dominated the game, and their stats are impressive, right? And Sam's were, you know, okay. But again, the reason they had good games is because of what Longo and Howell were able to do in the passing game early. And that really kind of broke Duke's back, and then it was – Javonte and Carter all to the races. I do think with Wake, really liking the idea of making teams travel the length of the field. I think the opportunities are going to be there to run the ball. I mean, they've been good against the run. They haven't been great. I think 4.6 yards per carry is what they're allowing. And you know, if you look at Virginia Tech, who's got one of the best run games in the country, when they played a couple weeks ago, Virginia Tech had 210 yards at 4.9 yards per carry. But because Virginia Tech doesn't have much of a passing game, Wake Forest was able to capitalize on that. And so I really think it's a matter of utilizing the run game, having success, being able to move the chains, wear down Wake Forest, get into the second half, and then take some shots when you have the opportunities. The fact that the Sam did so well with the RPO game, especially with some of those quick slants against Duke, that's what you got to do. Take advantage of those. You don't have to throw a deep ball every single time. And the more you can do that, you can get into the fourth quarter. We know how good this team plays in the fourth quarter. And the issue has been is that they've gotten to the fourth quarter in some of these games, and they've trailed. You know, FSU, of course, in Virginia. So you don't want to get in that situation. But I think the idea of kind of leaning on the run game early, and, of course, Long is going to take what's given to him. And Wake's going to show him some things. But just trust those guys and being able to make some plays and then hitting in the pass game when you can. I think that's the approach.
Jason, flip it. Carolina's defense. I'm looking at this as this might be an uh-oh game for Carolina's run defense, but it seems like every time Carolina has issues with a running team, it's because the quarterback can move. What can Sam Hartman do that gives Jay Bateman some indigestion preparing for this one?
It's that long mesh point. And it's, you know, Wake Forest doesn't need their quarterback to be a horse like Newman was, right? They don't need their guy to be that. Now, if they get that, look out. That makes it a lot harder. What they need is a guy that's going to consistently pull the ball when it's the right decision. Because you tackle that running back, and all of a sudden the quarterback has the football and gets 4 yards. And all they need is 4 yards because now they're ahead of the sticks and they do the same thing, same dang thing again. And if you do the same thing, God dang it, it's now third and two again. Dang it. And now they're going to run it again. And so that's the thing that he can do to give you trouble is constantly make sure that they have the numbers in the right spots. So, and again, you don't have to be a super runner as a quarterback. You just have to be tough. You have to make the right decision every time. Now, defensively, if you can be physical with that guy and you know, maybe force him into a bat, you know, if you can force that guy to pull it when you're actually going to be tackling him, now you get him behind the sticks. The way to stop Wake Forest is if you can get them in second and nine, they're a totally different offense. If they're in third and seven, totally different offense. If it's third and three, third and four, God dang it, here we go again. It's just that's what they do. And he's really good at making those decisions in really quick spaces and jumping forward to do all that. So yeah, it's it's tough. So
let me ask you this. Why, when I watched Wake Forest play last year, especially with Newman, and I'll freely admit I hadn't watched a ton of Wake this year, but why would a defender, whether it was Carolina defender or not, just hesitate? Why not just hit them both when they're in the mesh?
Well, if you can hit them both, if you've got the guy that can actually do that, then that's great. But the problem is if you hit them both, you've got the risk of taking down neither. Right? So, you know, it's one thing if you have, let's say you're Jeremiah Gemmel. You come through and you're able to make contact and you hit them both. Well, you can't get your arms around both of them, right? You better hit them both real hard because now you're going against 450 pounds of man and you're 225 pounds of man, right? You're going to have – you got a problem. So defenses, the way that you've got to do this is you've got to assign somebody who's – this guy is on your job is the running back. And your job is the quarterback. Your job is to tackle the first guy through. Your job is to take the second guy through. You have to do that. And you have to. And the thing is, it makes it harder is you can't just give the same guy the same assignment every time. Because then they'll change up who they block and how. So, okay, every time we've, you know, Jeremiah Gemmel's going to be on the running back every time. Or, we're going to always have this defensive tackle is going to be the guy that we're going to assign to that gap, and he's going to have the running back every time. Well, then they're going to option that guy a different way. They're going to block that guy, and now he's not – now the guy that's responsible for that guy is – there's nobody for him. And they're going to leave somebody else unblocked, and now you're screwed. That's option football, and that's – it's not unique to Wake Forest. What's unique to Wake Forest is how long they ride that mesh point. But everybody who runs option stuff, and that includes North Carolina, this is a problem for teams that play against them. So what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to find a way up front. You know, if Ray Vohasek or, you know, Tamon Fox or somebody can take two gaps at once on a given play, that evens your numbers back out. Now, if he does that and then manages to get himself, you know, beat pretty bad, then you're in real trouble. But you've got to have somebody who makes a play. Or, you know, if you're going to hit the running back so hard that the quarterback is going to be affected by it. That's what you've got to do. So, okay, they're going to slow that mesh point down. You better don't even waste time, you know, muddying that mesh point. Just hit the crap out of that running back and force the quarterback to keep it, and then try to hit the crap out of the quarterback when whoever gets there gets there. That's what you got to do.
Just hit somebody. That's what I – watching them last year in Winston-Salem, a lot of guys several times just stood there and didn't hit somebody.
That's what they're banking on. They're banking on taking away your aggressiveness. And honestly, you've got to – Jay Bateman has to tell his guys, look, if you've got a shot on this guy, you got to take it.
Yep. Hit somebody.
Do your job and rely on the next guy to do his job and get to the quarterback when he pulls it.
Yep. Absolutely. Greg, Wake's passing game. I mentioned Roberson early. Hartman makes great decisions with the ball. The thing about this, about Wake Forest, that we've talked about the mesh point, I can't believe they've only put the ball on the ground couple times. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. But Carolina defending their passing game, Patrice Renee is going to be important. Well, they can throw it. I mean, he's got 33 catches for 490 yards. I envision a Wake Forest, or excuse me, a Georgia Tech type deep shot. But Greg, where does Carolina on the defensive, on the back four or the defensive backfield, who stands out in this one, do you think?
Well, that's the great question, right? Because we don't exactly know what Kyler McMichael's status is. We don't know Don Chapman's status. The hope is Chapman's going to be back. We'll have to wait and see. So when you're having to rely on guys, I mean, North Carolina's four starters in their season opener did not play against Duke in the secondary. That's significant. And credit to the guys that were in there who did a pretty good job. But you've got to be careful. One thing I would point out, though, with Wake kind of leaning on the run game a little bit more, they've thrown the ball 172 times. Hartman's been sacked 21 times. And that's not a really good ratio. And so I think really what you're looking to do is you limit the run game as much as you can first and second down. We talk so much about winning on first and second down. And you get Wake into these obvious passing downs, then that's where you can have some success. And that's how you can get off the field. And like Jason says, you're third and four versus third and seven, completely different. And I think that's kind of where the margins are for where North Carolina can have some success defensively. And if you're sitting at third and three or third and four, passing game's a whole lot easier for Sam Hartman. And so that's where you've got to get creative. But the main thing for UNC is to win on first and second down, to get into some of these downs where you know exactly what he's going to do, and you send guys after him and try to at least force him out of the pocket, kind of get him down before he can do some damage down the field.
All right. I ask all those questions because it's going to come up relevant in my prediction. Jason, let's go to predictions. Carolina and Wake Forest in Kenan Stadium, 12 noon. Carolina's had some success in noon games, especially in Kenan Stadium. What happens on Saturday, Jason?
So I'm concerned a little bit about some – issues early in the game, in particular, thanks to the Anderson absence, that with the way that Wake is really active up front, they give teams trouble with how quick they are. And Carolina's offensive line is huge, and you know, one of the things that you can do to try to give them trouble is actually give them, force them to have to block guys that are, that move a lot and are really quick and caught and get quick penetration and all that. So, you know, I think there's going to be some early stuff that I'm a little twitchy about. I'm a little concerned about, but I think ultimately the Carolina's got a lot more talent on the offensive side in terms of being able to maintain balance. And I think ultimately they'll be able to run it well enough to set up some deep shots and to pull away in this game. I don't think that Wake Forest is going to be able to be balanced enough on offense to match Carolina's score. So I think they're going to be able to run it well enough against Carolina's front. Again, that's been the weak part of Carolina's defense to give them a game, to give them some trouble. But I think ultimately Carolina pulls away on in the second half in this game. I'm going to go with North Carolina 41, Wake Forest 27 in this game.
High scoring one, Greg.
Tommy, which two games this year has North Carolina?
Hold on, I'm going to jump down that because I just realized as much as they run the football, the clock's going to run a little bit more. I'm going to go 38-24.
Did you really just knock off two – interrupt Greg?
I knocked off two scores.
Two field goals.
I knocked off two scores. Okay. There we go.
Well, now I've got to take some time to think about this. but Tommy, which two games has North Carolina won the turnover margin this year?
God, man, you always ask these questions. NC State.
Yep.
And they didn't win it against Duke.
They did.
So it was State and Duke. I got it.
So the two big blowouts.
Right.
When North Carolina won the turnover margin. So they lost turnover margin in a 44-41 loss to Virginia, 31-28 loss to Florida State, and they lost it in a 26-22 game to BC, as well as that 56-45 shootout against Virginia Tech. I'm not counting Syracuse because they suck.
And it was like 2 years ago.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it was like, 2019. My point is, Jason, of course, is right in everything that he said. But the great equalizer is the turnovers. And if Wake Forest is somehow able to win the turnover margin, and say go plus two, this is going to be a very tight game. And North Carolina, you know, they've had trouble forcing turnovers primarily. And they've had a little bit of mishaps with taking care of the ball. They're not too bad. I don't think Wake's going to have as much success in forcing turnovers as they've had in the past, some other games this year. I think Sam Howell's done a really good job. And UNC running backs have done a great job taking care of the ball, not fumbling. I know Javonte had one, I guess, where Virginia, but it fumbled it out of bounds. So I think because of that, this tilts in North Carolina's favor. This is another one. I'm a little surprised that the point spread is two touchdowns. But I think North Carolina takes care of the ball well enough to win this one. I've got them winning 35-27.
Ooh, two Carolina wins, let me tell you. Okay. I ask about hitting both, Jason, for a reason. Sam Hartman has rushed I had it right here in front of me. Daggone it. Hartman on the years averaging minus 4 yards rushing a game. I understand that sacks play into that. He's had 21. But he is nowhere near the runner that Jamie Newman is. The running backs, on the other hand, are averaging 88 and 78 yards a game. They have some success, and they're pretty good. Carolina has to tackle the running backs. If Sam Hartman runs wild against Carolina, then you tip hat to Dave Clawson, and Wake Forest likely wins this one. I think that Brian Anderson's absence or not, if he plays, how effective he'll be, I think that is big. We've talked about it, Jason. You really hit on it. Anderson is key. A lot of people were down on him. At times, he has gotten so much better. So his absence is concerning. Carolina has to catch the football. Dyami has to catch the football. Whoever's in the slot. Emory Simmons has been fantastic. They can't have tip passes because Wake Forest has been opportunistic in getting those type of interceptions. You know, I keep wanting to pick a football score instead of a basketball score in these games, but it's hard for me to do so knowing how Carolina can put up points. You said you backed it up, Jason. What'd you say, 38-24? I'm going to go 40 Carolina, 31 Wake Forest. It all depends, like Greg says, on turnovers. And if Carolina can be smart, if Sam Howell can be smart and they can hit the running backs and force Sam Hartman to beat them on defense, I think Carolina wins this one in some potentially throwback uniforms. Wake Forest is sneaky good, and Dave Clawson is a sneaky good coach, and they don't get enough credit, but I think Carolina pulls it out.
Jason, I am praying that somebody tries to hit the mesh point and just splits right in between them just so we can talk about this next week.
So split the elongated mesh. Look, it's we've gone at this for seven straight weeks in the middle of all this that's going on. You guys have been champs. Folks that are listening to Inside Carolina Live on Saturday starting at 9 o'clock, you'll get me and Joey Powell, but also get Jason Staples and Greg Barnes live in the build-up to Carolina and Wake Forest at 12 noon in Kenan Stadium. And then 2 weeks off, and Greg didn't announce the Notre Dame time is 3:30 on Friday after Thanksgiving.
Black Friday, yep.
Black Friday, so shop online and watch Carolina there.
Johnny T-shirts.
Absolutely. I've already, look, if you're buying Carolina gear anywhere else, I don't know what to tell you. Guys, it's been awesome. You're great. That'll do it for the Inside Carolina podcast. Game plan, Jason Staples, Greg Barnes. I'm Tommy Ashley.
Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.